Genesis chapter 30. We have been walking through the book of Genesis, and we have been looking at the lives in the last few weeks of Abraham and his son Isaac, and now we're with Jacob. And Genesis chapter 30 is an interesting part of God's Word. And the reason that it's so interesting is if you've ever seen a Mexican soap opera, there is so much drama in this thing. It's just unbelievable. You can imagine that a house with multiple wives would have a lot of drama in it. We have two types of people in this room, is my guess. We have people who totally hate drama, and they don't want anything to do with it, and they don't want to be a part of drama in any way, shape, or form. And then we have the other type of person who loves drama. And if there is something going on, if there's some kind of juicy gossip, or if there is something happening, they want to get right in the middle of it. And so as we're looking at this chapter, Genesis chapter 30, we are right in the middle of some major drama, okay? Look with me, and actually, we're going to back up a few verses to Genesis chapter 29, and we're going to kind of just back up and kind of get a running start at Genesis chapter 30. Remember, at this point, we've got Jacob. He's the patriarch that we're studying. He got tricked last week. He got tricked into marrying not only Rachel. He worked 7 years for Rachel. And when he got done working for 7 years, he was promised to be able to marry Rachel. And he ended up marrying Rachel's sister Leah. And Uncle Laban tricked the trickster. And he was able to get Jacob to work for him basically for free for not just the 7 years, but for another 7 years. And Jacob ended up with two wives instead of one. Okay, now they are in a contest. Leah and Rachel are in this contest to have as many sons as possible. And they are going to be trying to accomplish that. Who's going to get the most? In fact, in those days, it may not have been easy to have children, just like it is today, but it was desirable to have children. And they wanted to have sons. All the people wanted to have sons. So again, look with me in chapter 31 of verse 29. Remember that Jacob has got one wife that he loves deeply and dearly. He is infatuated with her and loves her. And then another wife is unloved. The other one is unloved. She just happened to get to become his wife, and he didn't even really want that. Okay, so look at what happens in verse 31. Now the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, and he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. Leah conceived and bore a son and named him Reuben. For she said, because the Lord has seen my affliction, surely now my husband has loved me. Then she again conceived and bore a son and said, because the Lord has heard that I am unloved, he has therefore given me this son also. And she named him Simeon. She conceived again and bore a son. Now this time my husband will become attached to me because I have bore him three sons. Therefore he was named Levi. And she conceived again and bore a son and said, this time I will praise the Lord. Therefore she named him Judah, then stopped bearing. Now interesting, what happens is, and again, today we get a name. We get a name because our parents maybe like that name, or maybe we're named after somebody, or maybe we're confused for a couple minutes, you know. But back in those days, a name was kind of your identity. Now think about these names. Leah is so upset and so unloved by Jacob that she's saying, okay, if I can have some sons, if I'm the one that has sons and she doesn't have any sons, then Jacob will have to love me. I'm giving him his most prized possession, his sons, right? And you can see that in the progression of the name. Finally, with Judah, we have this idea of I'm praising the Lord for the son that he's given me. But up until that time, we've got Reuben, which means God's seen my afflictions. Now my husband will love me. I mean, that's a harsh name to have for the rest of your life, isn't it? I hope my husband loves me because I've had this son. Okay. And then we got Simeon there, and my husband will become attached to me. You can imagine if that's your name. Hopefully my husband will be attached to me because I had this child for him. Okay. So what we're going to see in here is there is some major, major family conflict in this relationship. Okay. Now, the only thing that Leah's got going for her, remember last week we kind of looked at the origins she's, and forgive the crassness of this, but she's kind of the ugly one. We've got Rachel, who is the beauty, who is the one who has all of Jacob's affection, who has his heart, who is, think of it this way, she's the favorite. And then you got Leah, and she is unloved. Okay? So look at verse 1 of chapter 30. And here's where the soap opera starts. Now when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, she became jealous of her sister, and she said to Jacob, "Give me children or else I will die." Okay? Now you can imagine that conversation, can't you? There's the blame game going on here. Give me some children. Now, look at look at the family relationship here and what's happening. Is there a lot of love here with Jacob's reply? Jacob's anger burned against Rachel, and he said, "Am I in the place of God who has withheld you from you the fruit of your womb?" Okay? So you see this interaction going on? Even with his favorite, there's this fighting. "Come on, give me some children. How come you're not giving me any children? This is not my fault. I'm not God. I'm not the one who places babies inside of mother's womb." And what we're going to find as we go through this is that God is the one in charge of procreation. He is the one in charge of it. He is the one who blesses people with children or blesses them without children. Okay? So look at Rachel's solution to her problem, and the soap opera is going to get deeper here in verse 3. Remember that when Rachel and Leah became the wives of Jacob, their father gave them a servant, okay? A female servant to help them in their everyday lives. Okay, look at verse 3. Here, the she is Rachel. She said, "Here is my maid, Bilhah. Go into her that she may bear on my knees, that through her I may have children." Now, what does this sound like to you? Those of you who have been with us for a while, kind of sounds like Abraham and Sarah. Remember, Sarah said, "I want a child. I'm not able to have a child. I can't bear children for you. So here is my handmaid, Hagar. You go have a child with her, and that child will then be mine." Now, interesting, she wants to have a child through through her servant. But as we read through this, let's ask the question, who gets the credit for having this child? Does Rachel get the credit or does Bilhah? Okay, now, again, it's just going to get more and more tangled here. Look at verse 4. So she gave, and by the way, just to say this, both in Abraham and Sarah's case, and also in Bilhah and Jacob's case, this is not God approved. Okay, just because it's recorded in the Bible doesn't mean that God approves it, but this is the custom of the day. If you wanted to have kids and you weren't able to have kids, you would have kids through a surrogate mother. Okay? Now, that doesn't mean that God approved it, but it is recorded here and it is inspired. Okay, look at what happens in verse 4. By the way, Bilhah has no control over the situation. So she gave him her maid Bilhah as a wife, and Jacob went into her. Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son. Then Rachel said, "God has vindicated me and has indeed heard my voice and has given me a son." Therefore, she named him Dan. Okay, again, that's the meaning of his name. I am vindicated. My sister's had all these kids, and now I'm vindicated. You see how much drama we got going here? They don't make soap operas with this much drama. Okay, look at verse 7. Rachel's maid, Bilhah, conceived again and bore Jacob a second son. So Rachel said, "With mighty wrestlings I have wrestled with my sister, and I have indeed prevailed." And she named him Naphtali. Okay? The name of this child is, "I am better than my sister." Okay? Are you with me? By the way, how many do we have so far? If you're keeping track, we're on 6. We got 4 of them through Leah. We've got 2 through Bilhah. Now, Leah is no longer able to conceive, and she's like, "Uh-oh, Rachel's getting some children through her handmaid." What do you think her idea is? "Well, I got a handmaid too. I'll show her." Right? Look at verse 9. When Leah saw that she had stopped bearing, she took her wife Zilpha and gave her to Jacob as a wife. Leah's maid Zilpha bore Jacob a son. Then Leah said, "How fortunate." So she named him Gad. You hear some sarcasm there? How fortunate. Now I've got 5 and you've got 2. Leah's maid Zilpha bore Jacob a second son. And Leah said, "Happy am I, for women will call me happy." And she named him Asherah. Okay, now we've got all these. At this point, how many do we have? We've got 8. And we have got some major family conflict going on here, don't we? How would you like to be Jacob at this point? He's gone from 2 wives to 4 wives. Now, that doesn't sound very exciting to me. I have 1 wife, and she there's very little drama in her life, and yet we still have some drama, right? And she's fortunate she only has 1 husband, because I cause a lot of problems for her. Okay, now let's just stop and talk about something really quick. Okay, I want to talk about fairness in families. Okay, because this whole thing is started because there. Well, let me put it this way: God didn't approve of Jacob marrying 2 women. Okay, and he doesn't approve of 4 wives at this point. But what? When he does, if he finds himself in that situation, he needs to be fair to them. And this whole thing, and there's always going to be, if you have more than 1 wife, there's always going to be jealousy. You cannot eliminate that. Okay. Now, I say that not based upon experience, but I have been to Africa before, and I have met men with multiple wives, with 2 or more wives. Okay. In fact, when we were in Africa, we were walking along, and I was with Jill and the pastor that was there, Musa, and this lady came up to me and said, "Would you like to marry me?" And I said, "I already have a wife." And she said, "That's okay. You have an American wife. You don't have a Mendi wife." And I said, "Well, I don't know if the American wife would appreciate me having another wife." And I looked over at her, and she said, "No." Okay? Now, this is, I don't know her name. I don't even remember her name. She didn't even give me her name. She just asked me if I would marry her. Okay? And in those situations, and we have been in homes, Jill and I have been in homes in Africa, people with multiple wives, and you got a home, and there's an aisle down the middle of the home, and there's bedrooms on this side, and there's bedrooms on that side, and one half of the house belongs to one wife, and the other half of the, and you know what? Nobody's happy. Okay, nobody's happy, right? And so let's just talk about fairness in family, because we need to relate this to what's going on in our. Does anyone have multiple wives in here? Probably not. Okay, if you do, we'll just call. Okay, we'll keep that quiet.
Take care of that.
All right. Okay, let me just say this: even though Jacob was tricked in his marriage with Leah, God still holds him responsible to love her. Even though he was tricked into his relationship with Leah, God still holds him responsible to love her. Okay? Will you turn with me just for a minute? Keep your finger in Genesis chapter 30 and turn with me in your Bible to Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 25. Now, in Ephesians chapter 6, we're going to get the armor of God. We're going to get, hey, here's the spiritual protection for you. Here are all these things that are going on. Sword of the Spirit. We got the breastplate of righteousness. We got the helmet of truth. We got all this great armor. The reason we have the armor is so that we're able to stand. Okay, if you read chapter 6, you're going to see stand firm, stand, stand, stand. Do not give up ground. You are a warrior in a battle. Okay? There are different parts. If you've ever been a part of this a military service, you will find that there are different jobs. There's some people that their job in the military is the marching band. And they march in parades and they do those type of things, but there are most people are warriors that are in the military. Some of us, we think that Christianity is about the marching band. It's about coming and getting a pep talk on Sunday morning. It's about feeling good. But the Christian life is not about the pep band. The Christian life is about a battle. Okay? Now, that was a total rabbit trail. And let's go back to chapter 5. Chapter 5, verse 25. What we have here is the responsibility of family members. Okay? We're going to have the responsibility of the wife and the responsibility of the husband. Today we're looking at the responsibility of the husband. Look at verse 25. It says this, husbands, love your wives. Okay? Husbands, love your wives. Part of Jacob's responsibility is to love Leah. And then he's going to give us a picture of what it looks to love your wife. Husbands, love your wives. The way, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her, so he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of the word, washing of water with the word, that he might present to himself the church in all her glory, having no spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she would be holy and blameless. So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his own wife loves himself. No one has hated his own flesh, but nourish and cherishes it, just as Christ also does the church. Okay? Now, Paul, divinely inspired by God to write these words, is going to give an analogy. Husbands, this is how you're supposed to love your wives. Okay? The way that Christ loved the church. How did Christ love the church? He left his place in heaven. He came and was born of a virgin, lived 33 years on this earth. At the end of his life, he died upon a cross, and he died and sacrificed himself. He gave his blood upon a cross so that the church might be saved. Okay? Husbands, is that how you love your wife? Right? Okay, now some of you say, well, I'm out of this because I'm not a husband. Okay? If you're going to be a husband someday, think about that. That's the responsibility of a husband. Now, interesting, he says in this little section that he sanctifies, Jesus sanctifies the church. He sanctifies so there will be no spot or wrinkle. Now, just think with me for a second. A spot is something on the outside, right? And a wrinkle is something on the inside. Part of the job of a husband is to love his wife. The best way that you and I can love our wives, to love the people around us. My job as a husband is to present my wife to God more holy and closer to him than the day that I got her. Okay, now you know what I find in a lot of homes? This is what I find in a lot of homes. When it's time for the children to go to bed, mama's in there reading the Bible stories and praying with the kids. And when it comes to prayer time, mama's the one that's praying. And when it comes to, we're going to go to church today, Mama's the one that's... Does that sound like someone who is trying to sanctify and present someone? What am I saying, men? Part of the job of a husband is to lead his family, to lead his wife. And we lead and we get rid of the spots and the wrinkles, not by yelling, not by complaining, not by getting angry, not by doing this or that, but by loving. I'm going to love those spots away. I'm going to love those wrinkles away. Okay? All right, back with me to Genesis chapter 30. And again, we're going back to part of Jacob's job here is to love Leah the way that Christ loved the church. And instead of loving her, and instead of we have just created more and more and more animosity. By the way, I'd like to mention this. We are going to find one female child listed here. We're going to end up with 11 by the time we're done today. Only one female child is going to be listed. Does that mean that only one female child is born to all these women that are having children? The answer is no. Okay? We're given the name of the boys, and we're given the name of the one girl because she is going to play a part in the upcoming story. But there are probably a lot of girls being born as well. Okay? Are you with me? Okay, look at verse 14. This is where, I mean, whoa, we're really getting drama here. Those of you who like drama, here we go. Okay? Now, in the days of the wheat harvest, Reuben went and found mandrakes in the field. Whose child is Reuben? We got Leah, right? And brought them to his mother Leah. Then Rachel said to Leah, "Please give me some of your son's mandrakes." And she said to her, Is it a small matter for you to take my husband? And would you take my son's mandrakes also?" So Rachel said, "Therefore, he may lie with you tonight in return for your son's mandrakes." When Jacob came in from the field that evening, Leah came out to meet him and said, "You must come in to me, for I have surely hired you with my son's mandrakes." So he lay with her that night. Whoa. Okay, now let's stop and let's ask the question. What are mandrakes? Okay, if you've seen Harry Potter, that's not what a mandrake is. Okay, you don't have to put on the earmuffs or whatever. This is something different than the Harry Potter mandrakes. Okay, I don't know what you believe about Harry Potter, but in Harry Potter there's mandrakes. Okay, now a mandrake back then, and if you take this Hebrew word, And you transliterate it. You know what transliterate means? Transliterate means like translate it as literally as possible. Mandrake means love plant. It's a love plant. Okay? This is like a fertility drug. Okay? So Reuben's out in the field and he finds these mandrakes. Now, there's some debate about this, but most people believe, first of all, in the area that they're at, this plant was very rare. It was rarely found. So there's not a lot of them going around, okay? And a lot of people believe it was like a plum-like fruit, okay? And what we see here is both these women, like, they want the mandrake, right? And so we have this almost like prostitution thing going on over a plum-like fruit. Right? Okay, I told you there's a lot of drama. I'm just going to say how it is. That's what's happening here. By the way, we've talked about this before. I don't believe that Jacob or his family, they know of God, but they don't know him personally. We are going to see Jacob's conversion in chapter 32. But up until this point, he's blessed by God. God has put his thumbprint upon Jacob, but there is not a personal relationship with Jacob and God. Okay? You know, that happens a lot in churches too, doesn't it? that people know a lot about God, but they don't know him personally. And you can go for years and years and years. You can be a member of a church. You can be baptized and not have a personal relationship with him. Okay? And it's not until you come to a point in your life where you say, God, you are my Lord. You are my Lord. All that I am, all that I have, all of my future, all of my family, all of my money, all that I am is now yours. And I place that in your hand. Okay? And we're going to see that happen in Jacob's life in a few weeks. But at this point, this is a person who's being blessed by God, who knows of God, but does not know him personally. Okay? Now, these why are these women fighting over these mandrakes? They both want to have a baby, right? And they believe the superstition of the day that if they eat some mandrakes, that they will become fertile. And when they become fertile, they'll be able to have a baby. Okay? Now, we're going to see how that works out for them. But I just want to, we've talked about this before too. In God's kingdom, we have this upside down kingdom where if you want love, the way you get love is by giving away love. Okay? Bible says in the Proverbs, if you want a friend, be a friend. In God's kingdom, it's an upside down kingdom. And if you want time, you give time away. If you want money, you give your money away. If you want a blessing, you give a blessing away. Okay? We are going to see Leah give away the thing that she has. The thing that she wants is to be fertile. The thing that she wants is to have a baby. And the belief of the day, the superstition of the day is, if I eat this fruit, I'm going to have a baby. She is going to give that away. And what is God going to give her in place of that? Well, we're going to find out in just a second, aren't we? Now, before we go there, let's talk about this. Superstition has no place in the Christian life. Okay? Superstition has no place in the human. What is superstition? Now, I want to distinguish between superstition and spiritual warfare. Okay? Superstition is this belief that there are certain things. Like maybe it's a number. You don't want this many of something, or you don't want, you have a number that if you're playing a sport and that number's on your jersey, that you're going to do well. But if you don't, I've read about baseball players, that they professional baseball players, they walk out on the field and they have to, their left foot has to be the first foot that touches the baseball field, because if their right foot touches first, they're going to have a bad game. Okay, or maybe it's a ritual, or maybe it's a day. Okay, or maybe it's your horoscope. Like, or maybe you go to a Chinese restaurant, and you open up and there's a fortune. Okay, now does that have any place in the kingdom of God? That's the question. Okay? What does God think about those things? Well, let me give you a couple of verses. And this is more to do with going to tarot card readers and things like that. Exodus chapter 22, verse 18. You don't need to turn there. But I just want to read it to you. Now, this is harsh. Okay? It says this. It says, you shall not allow a sorceress to live. Okay? Someone who's practicing these superstitions, this spiritual, divination, and I'm going to read your palm, and I'm going to, all of those type of things. Revelation chapter 22, verse 15. This is one of the last verses in the book of the Bible. It's talking about people who are in heaven, and then it's going to say there's people that are outsides. Outside are the dogs, the sorcerers, the immoral person, the murderers, the idolaters, and everyone who loves and practices lying. Okay? It's this idea that God has that it's you're going to believe more in someone looking at a line on your hand than you are in what my word says? Okay? Now, I want to differentiate these superstitions and these superstitions that we have in our hearts and in our lives and those type of things from spiritual warfare. Okay? Do you know that there is a battle going on? If we could see, we see the physical things with our eyes, but if we could see the spiritual things with our eyes, do you know what we would see all around us? We would see a battle between angels and demons. Okay? We would see this battle that is happening. Okay? And maybe you feel that. Maybe you feel that battle. You know what? Over the last 3 or 4 weeks, our family, the Bruno family, has been under incredible spiritual... There's incredible spiritual warfare going on. Okay? Things that normally take 2 or 3 years to happen have all happened in 3 weeks. Okay? Right when we thought that, you know, things couldn't get worse two days ago, we have a condo. Jill's job is to manage a condo. The sewer line backed up and we had sewage flowing through our condo. Okay? And that mud out thing that we did for a family the other day ago, we had that happen in our condo. They cut all of the drywall 2 feet. Our condo, and you know, we're like 2 weeks away from the biggest payday of the year, which is Iron Man. Okay? Coincidence?
Insurance
is going to be handling it. Okay, and I believe God is going to take something bad and make it into something good. Okay, now with that said, you may be experiencing spiritual warfare in your life too. In fact, I know a lot of you and I know what's going on in a lot of your lives. And I know that there are just weird things happening, right? There are things that are not explainable other than something spiritual is happening. Okay, now... Why is something spiritual happening? Why is spiritual warfare happening in my life and in your life and all, in lives of all these people around us? You know why? Because God is doing something here. God is doing something here. God is using this service to touch people's hearts and to touch people's lives. You know that even in the midst of difficult spiritual things happening in our lives, we got plans for our new church building. And within the next week or two, it's going to permitting. You know, we are, as a church, God is working in people's lives. We're sitting here, we're crowded in this building. We're only going to get more crowded as more people come. People, you know what they say? You know what all the church planters and all the church building people say? That when you're 80% full, you're full. You need to find more room for people. Right? Are we 80% full here? Yeah. Okay, I see 3 or 4 seats, 5 seats. Right? But God is going to put a building right there. By this time next year, I believe we will be in a new building. God is doing a new thing. God is working. But in the midst of that work, He is allowing some spiritual warfare to come into your life and into my life. Okay? Now, there's two things we can do. We can buckle under the pressure. We can give in. We can turn to those things that give us comfort. Maybe drugs or alcohol. Maybe we give in to some things on the internet. We can give in to this or that, or we can get on our knees and we can say, God, by your power and through your grace, we know you will deliver us, and you're going to take this difficult thing that's happening in my life and you are going to use it to refine me, and you are taking the piece of coal and you, through time and pressure, are turning me into a diamond. Okay, let's go back to our unfolding drama here. Look at verse 17 with me. Leah gave away the mandrakes, and Rachel's supposed to get pregnant, but look what happens. Verse 17. God gave heed to Leah, and she conceived and bore Jacob a fifth son. And Leah said, God has given me my wages because I gave my maid to my husband. So she named him Issachar. Leah conceived again and bore a sixth son to Jacob. And Leah said, God has endowed me with a good gift. Now my husband will dwell with me because I have bore him six sons. And she named him Zebulun. Afterwards, she also bore a daughter and named her Dinah. Now, how many sons are we up to now? If you've lost track, we're up to 10. Okay? Leah's got six of them. Okay? And then we've got the two handmaids, and they've got two apiece, so that's 10. All right? Then look what happens in verse 22. God remembered Rachel, and God gave heed to her and opened her womb. So she conceived and bore a son and said, God has taken away my reproach. And she named him Joseph, saying, may the Lord give me another son. Okay? God is the one who's in charge of procreation. You see that Leah's had a couple sons before Rachel's had hers. Those mandrakes did nothing for her. It was only the power of mighty God that gave her a son. Okay? There is a way that the world does things. The world believes in mandrakes. Okay? And then there's a way that God does things. I want you to think about the way that world does things versus the way that God does things. How about in the way that we talk? How about in the way that we talk? There is a way that the world talks. The way that the world talks is negative. The way the world talks is with curse words. The way that the world talks is putting people down. We accuse people. That's the work of the devil, people. The devil is called the great accuser. If you are always pointing the finger, if you are always accusing, if you are always pointing out the negative, if you're always talking down, that's the way the world does things. And the reason the world does that is because they follow after their father. Okay? The way that God's people talk, we breathe life on people. We encourage, we give hope, we give a reason. Okay? By the way, what does the third commandment say? Third commandment says, we do this with the kids when we're teaching. Watch your words. Do not use the Lord your God's name in vain. How do we use God's name in vain? We say, oh my, and then we put his name there. Right? What does it mean to use the Lord's name in vain? It means, vanity means, it's to treat God's name as if it means nothing. So treat God's name as if it means nothing. And we got text slang for using God's name in vain, OMG. We've got all of these things. Let me encourage you. We don't do things the way the world does things. We do things differently. Our speech is different. The way that we conduct ourselves is different. How about the way that we run our business? There's a way that we can get ahead. We can take shortcuts. We can cheat people. We can be dishonest in our dealings with people. And God's way is different than that. God's way says, you know what? I don't need to make every last cent out of you. I want you to walk away from this exchange in our business with a win. Okay? When we were, maybe it's the way that you treat people. We went to McDonald's one time, and we had this is, I'm bringing the drama level up a little bit here. We had this lady at our church, not this one, but the one in Alaska. And while we were there, she got a cheeseburger. And on her cheeseburger, she had asked for no pickles. And she got pickles on her cheeseburger. And she went back up to the girl who had checked her out at the register, and she just unleashed on her. I said no pickles. I even asked if you got the thing that there wasn't supposed to be any pickles, and then I got pickles on my thing, and blah, 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 blah. Well, here's this lady from our church, and she is treating this little teenage, I mean, I'm sure it was really, really fun to beat up on somebody, you know, but this little teenage girl is like crying because she accidentally, someone in the back put pickles on the hamburger, right? And we had this guy in our church that was so appalled by what happened. I'm not saying that what he did was right. He started calling her cheeseburger. And every week for 6 months, every time he saw her, he'd call her cheeseburger. He changed her name. Okay? And again, maybe what he did wasn't right either, but I think you see the point. There's a way to get the pickles removed from your cheeseburger. By the way, this is how I do it. Okay? And then finally, how the world's way of doing things is to just, you know, you hurt me, I'm going to hurt you. You kill my dog, I kill your cat. Right? But God's way is forgiveness. It's forgiveness. Let's do this. Why don't we bow our head and close our eyes? We have worked our way through this, partway through this chapter. We're coming back to chapter 30. But has God spoke to you? Is there something in your life that you need to change? I just want to give you a minute of quiet to just do some business with God. And then we'll